we're back, and big show this weekend. You know, we've been on the air all week. Little State of the Union I gave you guys, part one, parts two and three. Good friend contributor, you guys know him from Beyond the Mic. He was down in Orlando at the winter meetings, and he's joining me for a little roundtable as we try to pick up the pieces and move on here in Mets land and set up the rest of the offseason. I think it's time to dry the tears, put away the hurt, put the memories in the box, and move forward. So David Mills, welcome to part two here. You're joining me, kind of co-hosting throughout. And how was the experience? I think some of the fans that listen, I don't know if they completely understand how the winter meetings works and how uninspiring it could be at times and how exciting it could be. I've heard so many stories of people just standing around the lobby and then all of a sudden you see a bunch of reporters running around with chickens like their heads cut off. So welcome to the program and give everybody an idea how your experience was in Orlando last week.
Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. The experience in Orlando is quite interesting. Very, very busy place. Bustling, I think, is the best word for it. Very male-oriented. It was interesting. It was a bit of an eye-opener. I'll tell you something that surprised me was that there were only three big time setups for TV. That was SNY, yes, and the network, the MLB network. So I thought the Dodgers station would be there. I thought the Red Sox station would be there, and maybe a few others. There was a lot of people walking around this huge expanse of hallways. A lot of drinking going on as the day
of
went on
course.
into the evening.
That's like the old Billy Martin and, Art Fowler and all those old guys used to get together and swap stories and almost trade Joe D for Ted Williams, right?
Yep. And when I left, it was about 10 o'clock. There was, man, I'll tell you, the bar was, they were flowing out of the bar. They couldn't even get everybody in the huge bar area that they had. But anyway,
Wow.
it was an experience. And I was at the Scouts dinner. Several scouts were honored, and that was a nice event that was well attended. But the other interesting thing is you could get a lot of good information from like the guys who were the techs at SNY and who set up the set and who, the engineers and what have you. One of the funniest things, I was sitting there near the SNY booth, and somebody comes running past at full speed. I'm looking at my phone, and guy runs past, and I look up, and I could see that it was John Heyman in his jeans and his sport jacket with his bow legs. It's the funniest sight, just running full speed down the hall. I guess Boris came into the building somewhere. He was in pursuit.
John, we're just joking because I know John followed. John, we're just joking. He gets sensitive about the Boris stuff. So,
well, I'll tell you, I couldn't believe how fast he was running. So I was impressed. But I just want to say a couple of quick things. First, about Edwin Diaz. I think at his press conference with the Dodgers, he told the truth and he said he went to them because they're a winner. Okay, that's a valid reason for going. What was reported, he didn't say at the time publicly, but if he said it privately, I do want to criticize him on this. The David Stearns and other Mets executives had no business talking to him about the signing of Williams.
He's not an employee. He was a free
That's
agent.
Right. He's not an employee. What a lot of people don't know is the minute that you opt out,
you
you are
cannot
no
communicate
longer
with
in the
them.
Organization, and your name comes off the roster, comes off the active roster, the 40-man roster. And there is no business on the planet where if you're not employed, they explain their strategy to you. There's no business. So if that was something he thought, that's very, it's naive, and his agent should have let him know that. But again, maybe he didn't say that. So as far
I
as
feel like there was a lot of excuses or red herring or straw man just to really deflect the fact that, look, he opted out. The Mets didn't blow him away with a 5-year deal that he wanted, like they did when he didn't opt out the last time. And he started to flirt, and the flirting became serious. Anytime you let a player go speak with somebody else, you know this, Dave, they could fall in love no matter how long they're here. And I think that happened. And whatever is said, whether it's Alonso or Nimmo or Diaz at a press conference, Tyler Rogers, I don't know if they'll do one up in Toronto. I don't think it really matters much anymore because just like when they come here and talk about how they always want to be a Met, and let's face it, Jorge Polanco just signed a contract with the Mets. The Mets had to overpay to get him because he wanted to go back to Seattle. And money talks. And they have to look at their short earning time in their lives and their careers. And sometimes it's not the emotional, and I don't think we're going to see these guys like David Wright, Mike Schmidt, Carl Yastrzemski. I'm going back. I'm just trying to think of names. Roberto Clemente, players back in the day that spent their whole careers with one team. It's going to be very difficult because the money doesn't work out, especially when they get north of 32. Let's face it, especially when they get north of 32. So I think we're really, unfortunately, and I think the fans are a perfect example. It's a perfect way to start the segment. The fans are going to have to look at players l differently, and I think it's going to be more about the front than the back going forward. And I think that's a hard thing for fans to swallow because it's a business on both sides, and it's so much money now, Dave, that you can't blame either side for making the decisions that not necessarily are tied to the emotional or the relationship part of the sport that everybody grew up on, unfortunately.
Absolutely. But Pete wasn't 32, but I'll say this. If anybody didn't think after last year's kind of debacle at the free agent situation that he was, if they thought he was going to sign with the Mets again, that's just, it wasn't going to happen. It was obvious a year ago. And it didn't happen, and he got more money. And you know what? I think the Orioles were bidding against themselves. Everybody
Correct.
who I talked to, because I was there at the right time. Everybody I talked to seemed to think that nobody else was offering more than 3 years. So, and
Oh,
David
I knew he was
Stern
going there.
wasn't going.
Once I heard Schwarber was off for 5 150, I knew that's where that was going. And truthfully, I said it during the summer after he broke the home run record. It's a guy that on paper is worth 5 years 150. One team had to buy into that. I thought it might have been might be Chicago or Boston. I thought Boston because of and look, I wasn't so sure Fenway Park was going to be good for him anyway. And it was the Orioles, and all it takes is one team. And the Mets said nope. We're the Mets viewed Pete closer to what they gave Polanco than they what the Orioles gave him in the Schwarber world, which is crazy because you and I don't agree. I think that he's in that bandwidth. But they don't see him as a good bet past 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, I think the Orioles, it was a good signing for the Orioles. It kind of coalesces their team to some degree, gives them a really good right-handed power hitter in the middle of that lineup. I think it was probably a very good move for them. Do I think they'll get their money's worth? Well, if they get to the World Series in the next 5 years, then they got their money's worth. That's all. I mean, they have a tough
Right.
division to just like
Yep.
the Mets do, but I think that American League East is even more of a beast than than it was last year.
Now, here's the setup here, and it ties into kind of putting a bow on Diaz, Alonso, Nimmo. You want to put Tyler Rogers in there. That look, they got the fourth year there. I think the Mets were very competitive from the reports. They were not going to give Tyler Rogers a fourth year. I think he's better than people give him credit for. If there was a reliever out there to go long term, his arm angle, I think, prevents injuries. But here's where I think we all, myself included, should have been more paying attention. Last spring, after OMG Grimace, after all the vibes of 24, it made perfect sense for them to find a way to bring Iglesias back. And they didn't because they valued Iglesias on a minor league deal and earn your keep coming back because of his age, because of his profile, because of the cost, all these things. And they were comfortable walking away from a very popular player. And Mets fans were annoyed, but they ignored it. And let's face it, talk putting the clubhouse aside and whether he would have had an impact. Stearns was right. The Mets front office under Stearns have their price. They have their vision. They don't necessarily ca calculate in non-baseball factors. If you're going to make $30-plus million a year, you got to be a complete player on both sides of the ball or generational. Soto's generational. He's also added stolen bases to his repertoire, so he's a little bit more than a one-dimensional player. Lindor, two-way player. I've heard some reports that may be willing to go that way with Bellinger. Versatile two-way player. They're looking at his body. in terms of when they do these free agents, the historical decline. I know that we love the trumpets and they love the what Diaz could bring. They see a two-pitch pitcher whose velocity is declining, who the minute that velocity goes below 95, or for whatever reason, his bite on his slider and his fastball disappears. He becomes Jose Mesa late career, a very bad pitcher and a very expensive pitcher. And then you start to look at they got 30 plus million in Lindor, 50 million in Soto, maybe 50 million in Skubal next year. And you have four players, if you add in Pete, if he came back, that are making $160 million on this payroll. And I understand the Mets fans say Cohen's rich, but anybody who's worked with wealthy people also knows they're shrewd with how they spend their money. That's a complicated ask for the Mets fans for nostalgia to for the owner to bite. Now, I think Diaz, they got caught with their pants down a little bit.
Yes.
But let's face it, I can't beat him up for not going 5 years. There were reports that he got maybe four. I don't know what kind of deferred money was in there. Essentially, Diaz got the guaranteed money that he wasn't guaranteed for the next 3 years on the original contract. He got that and a little bit more. He didn't make a ton more, Dave, when you look at that contract. So when it's all said and done, Nimmo, decline, all that stuff, I think Mets fans, and I talked to a Mets fan on Friday, not a guy that's like diving into social media and stuff, older Mets fan, guy that grew up maybe more in your generation than mine. He's angry. And I think this is where Cohen's connection with social media, the fans, he felt that Cohen, when he challenged them about coming out to the stadium and how he's challenged the Mets fans to support the team, he almost like it was promised a winner. And I think the Mets fan feels, well, this organization has an obligation to keep our players that we love and then add all the goodies we want because the owner's rich and because he promised us a championship. And that's just not how this thing works. Now, I think Pete is a good bet to be productive for the next 5 years, maybe at least three or four. I think Diaz will be okay in this contract. Nimmo, maybe there's some debate on that. So that's me. Clearly they don't. And now you're seeing with Polanco, where they're trying to find ways to get derivatives of what they gave up and then maybe pounce on a big name player who I don't know if is available this offseason via the trade market or free agency that they feel is a better investment. That's how I summarize it. And I think that Mets fans have to really come to grips with that. They may not like it. They may think it's like running the Milwaukee Brewers, but that's where we're at. And I don't think it's an unfair thing to have the guy who's being paid $10 million a year to put his own stamp on the organization.
Well, I think that, if anybody thinks that Polanco is going to be playing first base, I don't think there's a chance in hell that he's going to be playing first base.
He's
I
a
think
DH, right?
he
You
was
think he's a
picked up
DH?
as a DH, and I took him off my list because I thought he was basically a second baseman, and the Mets
Me
are
too.
absolutely loaded in second
And
baseman.
he ain't a good defensive second baseman or
Oh, and the
shortstop.
Met, I think everybody else that the Mets have are much, much better second baseman, but as a DH, as a switch hitter, as a guy who had, people don't really had 26 home runs last year, two home runs off of Skubal in the postseason. That's pretty
Big
impressive.
hit to win a game in the postseason too,
And
when you're
his
at the fifth.
splits are good.
Yep.
So I think he's a guy who I thought they should go after Andujar. I think Polanco as a DH is a little bit better option. So I'm happy with that. That was a good move. And you know what? Stearns and the guys who are there now, they're going to put their, it's going to be their team, not the team they inherited, not the team that people love the players. It's going to be a team that can win. And
Right.
if they can't win this year, they're going to be in winning position in the next, 3 out of the next 4 years. So, and I do think they can win this year. There's still some people out there to pick up and to make deals for. I do think they're going to make a deal with San Diego. I've said that for a few weeks now.
And
Who's
you felt being down the winter meetings, there was a lot of buzz around that, just from your vibe down there, from what I understand. That
Yeah,
San
I mean,
Diego and the Mets are partners in a lot of ways, that a lot of people are connecting them.
I talked to some of the people in the Mets, SNY's Baseball Night New York sphere, and I got to say, Dave Lennon is a super nice fellow, and he's the Newsday guy, so you should be pretty proud and happy to have him as their Mets beat reporter. But yeah, I think San Diego is the perfect. AJ Preller was one of the people making he introduced a guy from San Diego who got an award at the Scouts dinner. I think he's got the toughest job in baseball right now because he's got to dump salary and compete with the Dodgers in a division where it's almost impossible to compete with the Dodgers. In fact, a friend of mine left today for Europe for a trip, and I said, by the time he's a Dodger fan, by the time you get back, they'll probably have Tucker and and Scrubel in the fold. So just to make the competitive balance a little bit worse.
Right.
But
I think watch for Toronto on Tucker. That's my feeling. I think Toronto is as much of a threat to be a big spender, and they have Rogers money, which is as good as Kevin Cohen money, putting the Canadian economics aside, which Toronto doesn't always have the same hits that you see with Montreal. I think Toronto's a big threat. You saw that with Tyler Rogers. It sounds like, just listen to Heyman, the Mets were outbid by Toronto. Toronto knew they had to have to overpay to get Rogers back.
Yeah, and Rodgers, this is an interesting topic. The Mets gave up 10 pitchers and a promising young hitter at the deadline. Now, even though those 10 pitchers aren't going to make it to the show, I can assure you one, two, and maybe three of them will. And will Jesus Baez make it for the Cardinals or somebody? Who knows? But he's got the hit tool. That's a lot to give up, and they ended up with nothing. They got
Well, they
production
ended up with, and
fertilizer.
that's the point. Even with the Scooble deal, potentially, you're only really trading sometimes for 8 weeks. The
Right.
Dodgers themselves had Yu Darvish at one point and Manny Machado, and they got nothing out of it. I mean, they didn't win a championship, but they didn't keep them. Yordan Alvarez was a Dodger. People don't realize that. They traded him, and I can't remember the pitcher's name, for a back end of the rotation starter. From the Astros. This happens. And I think Ernie Dove, who does great work and he comes on the show a lot, pointed out, and I'm counting them right here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. There's 14 prospects that the Mets are going to have to protect from the Rule 5 draft a year from now. Chris Suero, Ryan Clifford is on there, Marco Vargas, Jacob Reimer, Jett Williams, Jack Weniger, Zach Thornton, some guys who may be contributors at the big league level. But there are some guys that you look at them, and I think that's where he looked at some of the players he gave away at the deadline and said, look, I don't have room for these guys. They're not ready. Let me get 8 weeks of Tyler Rogers instead of losing them and hoarding my prospects. I think that when you start to have a farm system that has depth, which they haven't had in a long time, maybe since the 80s. And you could even argue how good that was back then. We didn't really have the prospect analysis that we have today. This is going to be a part of it. The fans get too attached to prospects that they hear. The Wilmer Floreses were held on, the guys like that back in the day, because the Mets, that's all they had. They weren't able to spend money in the international market and what have you. So it's a different world that the Mets are in, and I think they can't be afraid. Because you're going to be wrong. Not every deadline deal works out, Dave.
No,
The
no.
Dodgers didn't win a World Series with Machado and Darvish. Now they went. I think they went to the World Series with them. But still, they didn't hang on to Machado forever. They gave up Yordan Alvarez. Imagine if the Mets did that deal. Imagine that. Nobody ever talks about that he was a Dodger and was given away for a back of the rotation starter or reliever. I can't. I'll have to look it up. Imagine if that was the Mets. So I think Mets fans' mindset has to change. They're still in a mindset that they're a Wilpon run team, and I think they're too attached to the back of the jersey and not the front. See, to me, I've been that way too, Dave. Look, let's be honest. The Mets should have traded Wright and Reyes when Madoff situation happened. They didn't. Looking back, knowing the financial situation of the Wilpons, it would have been proper to trade Syndergaard and DeGrom and Harvey before they busted, because they weren't going to be able to afford to pay them, and they should have been run more like the Rays. They didn't. And truthfully, Dave, you know this. When Cohen took over, many owners would have ripped that thing down to the studs and been bad for 3 years. And he knew he couldn't because of the Yankees, because of the media.
FaceTime video.
So, like, I guess maybe we need to change our mindset, because I'm guilty of this too.
So yes, I mean, I hear everything you're saying. It's funny because I was really high on a few guys in the Met system. Jake Mangum was somebody I loved and still do. And somebody was over here from the front office of the Rays the other day at my home, and I said, "Hey, Jake, He was my man. He was a guy I had my eye on, though. He said, "We love him. He's the best fourth outfielder in baseball." And there's no doubt about that in my mind. He's a switch hitter. He gets on base, knows how to get on base, can play small ball, can lay down bunts. Excellent defensive outfielder at all three positions and has a good arm. There's nothing I don't like about Jake Maguire. I'd love to have him back to be that fourth or fifth outfielder for the Mets. Carlos Cortez. Last, I was high on Cortez, recommended him to several teams, and he ends up playing the last 3 months of the year. He's platooning or starting most of the time with the Athletics. Can't call the Athletics any city name anymore. I mean, there are guys out there who came out of the system. You'd be surprised what you'd find from everybody's system. Certainly, Yordan Alvarez is a great example. The Dodgers have to get rid of guys in trades because they're constantly making moves. But, if you get to, I would say I'm leaning prospect hugger, but I'm not a total prospect. There are some people who are total prospect huggers. I think that in terms of what the Mets have now, you're right, that all of these guys are going to be Rule 5 guys, have to play Triple-A ball this coming year or get a chance to play in the show. And I didn't realize Wendinger was going to be a 5-year player. But yeah, I
I
mean,
think it's also based on their age when they're. I have to get the rules up, but it's.
some of the college guys, who
They don't
graduate.
want them being. I mean, the obviously they don't want them being tied to an organization forever if they're D. And the Mets are a perfect example. Imagine if you didn't have these rules, these players would be stuck in these systems for.
Sure.
Mets are ready, you know, and that's not fair to them too. I understand that.
So everybody has to realize that this is now David Stern's team. So he inherited just about everybody, except some pitching that he put together. Basically, the team that was being put into the positions and hitting was a team that he inherited. And he has a vision. I'm sure that's why he was hired. He's being paid $10 million a year, not to sit there and have the owner say, "Oh, I want you to go out and get this guy," or "I want you to go out and get this guy," but to be the front man. Now, I'm sure he was forced to do the Diaz, the Soto deal.
I think that that was, I mean, that, but that makes sense. I mean, I heard one thing and I can't verify it that he liked Bregman better than Soto. But, you know, Soto's generational hitter. I think there's an idea from the fan base that Cohen is in that room day to day being involved in every move. And I could assure you,
No.
running the business that he has, he can't be. He
Yeah.
can't. Now, does an agent call him up like Boris and say, hey, I have Carlos Correa? Or does Stearns call him up and say, hey, they want you to invest $760 million over the next 15 years? You better damn well be sure he's involved. But he's given them a budget and guidelines. And at some point, there are moves that are made that he's finding out at the same time, not maybe when we are, but when they are happening. He's not blessing off every move. This isn't Jeff Wilpon that wants to be a pseudo GM. And it's almost like the fans complained about that whole environment, and now they're not getting it. Tommy Tanis went to Colorado, a longtime member of the Mets front office, helped with the farm system for years. Stearns wants his own guys. To give him credit on one thing, and I know fans are going to say I'm a shill on this, and that's okay. He could have came in 2023, and he did. He fired Buck. That was one of the first things he did. But he could have purged the whole place, players as well. He didn't. He kind of wormed it and eased it, got almost to the World Series doing that, got lucky, let's face it, but that's part of being in a tournament sport. And now he's taking more of a sledgehammer to it. And even so, he's not completely taking a sledgehammer to it. I do not believe they're rebuilding. I do not believe that they're going to be a second division club unless the moves they make or the prospects that they bring up fail. I think that they think that they could get into the tournament. And I think that's what they're looking to do. Because let's face it, giving up a whole haul for Skubal or Mason Miller is only guaranteeing you a week of baseball. And if you give up 6 years of a player for a week of baseball, that's not good business. You know that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because if anybody's, I read Evan Drellick's book on the Astros scandal. Really, if you want to get inside what a rogue front office is all about, read Evan's book because it's so well written, so well reported. And he lo you can tell in there that he had the utmost respect for, and so did the people at the Astros because David Stearns was actually there then. And the other he, they had the utmost respect for him and for Bobby Heck. And so I think that Getting inside a book like that, understanding how a front office works would really help anybody who really wants to kind of get inside the game. So highly recommend it. And I'm sorry I can't remember the title of the book, but I was looking for Evan at the Athletic table because he writes for the Athletic.
Now,
But, you
go
know,
ahead. I'm sorry.
I think the other thing you find out is, and I found out is that, see, the book on Nimmo was a lot different than any of us ever thought. So some players know how to manipulate the media and they know how to talk to the media so that you won't know exactly who they are, what they are. I'm not going to say anything more than that, but I think the Mets had to move Nimmo. It was an absolute net necessity, and they did. Now, what bothers me, I don't think they moved him for somebody of the same quality in terms of as a player. I think that Semien is still a good defender. He'd probably be a good defender for at least the next couple of years, but his hitting has gone down every year the past couple of years, and that worries me.
Well, that's where the no trade clause and the years and the decline. And I think that, and maybe this goes into what everybody's talked about, the whole clubhouse with Nimmo, the captain. Nimmo to me was a better player when he was an on-base money ball player,
Yes.
walking a lot. Now I know you've talked about this since you've been contributing to Talking Mets. You liked him being more of a home run producer, middle of the order. He's very similar to Polanco statistically. When you see that, a player that nobody's excited about. I thought when he was more choosy, more selective, more top of the order, the numbers bear out. He was a top 15 player at times in the sport. And, I think that that's where other teams probably are looking at for what he's, and then you factor in the whole fact that he may be compromised. And let's not remember these herniated discs, I keep going back to them. They're not a joke. Like people keep thinking, ah, he'll be out a week. The guy's playing 155 games. I give him credit, not on turf, of course, but on grass. But 155 games in a corner outfield spot, even so, on that neck, the movements that you have to make, one dive, one wrong move, you could be out for a month more. There's a lot of red flags with him. So I'm not surprised. Plus, you have the no trade clause, so he had to approve where he went. And then you look at the players they brought in, Dave, and this is a perfect segue, ties into the offensive guys. Semien and Polanco, and I've done some research on them. Guys who are not rah-rah, but they're workers. They take their craft seriously. They go into the clubhouse coming ready to work. And I think that, and I'm not saying that Nimmo didn't work hard and that Pete didn't work hard, quite the opposite. But I think they want guys in that clubhouse that are more business-oriented, less rah-rah, less home run camera in the dugout. A lot of the things that fans valued from OMG Grimace is cool, but that's not why they won. Like, that just was like dressing. You win by coming to work, and chemistry's coming to work, coming to the clubhouse, coming prepared to play, coming prepared to do the best version of that role and accept that role that you can. And I think Beatty needs that. I think Alvarez sure as hell needs that. I think Vientos needs that. I mean, I heard Ottavino even talk about Vientos and how when he came up, he was focused on the wrong things. I'm sure Mauricio and Acuna, if they're going to be around, need that. And bringing in these kind of guys, I think, is part of the plan. I think they're balancing that part out, even though analytics doesn't show it.
I don't want to. I think Nimmo did one of the toughest things you can do as a position player, a hitter, and that is moving from that leadoff kind of on base guy to a guy who could drive in runs. But I know I have a bit of a heel problem. When you have problems with your feet, you have problems with discs, what have you. It's really hard to
Sure.
sustain. But okay, enough talk about Diaz. Enough
Yeah.
talk about.
Now, where do the Mets go? So Polanco was the first step. I had said, I'll set this up. I wanted the offseason built around bringing back Alonso at first and bringing back Diaz and then figuring out the appendages on the offense. And we'll start with the offense from there. That's gone. That's not going to happen. So now here's the buzz on, what I've learned back in. What I see on front end and educated speculation, nothing of this is concrete, but I keep hearing that they're in on Bregman. They're looking to see where that market goes. Bellinger, they're serious about. I don't think they're as serious on Tucker. I do not believe that they're not going to sign anybody to a long-term deal on the offensive side. I'll just talk offense now. But I told you, the guys that they're going to give long-term deals at 30 AAV have to be more complete. They cannot be one-dimensional players or less than a complete player like Alonzo. So I could see maybe Bellinger being the apple of their eye, and then possibly looking to make deals around the margins there. Or, and I keep telling people this, I'm not surprised if they're going to go with more of these young kids, Beatty, Acuna, than you think. I mean, Acuna's having a good winter ball. So what do you see happening on the offensive side?
Okay,
Let's
so
start
let me
there.
start with this. And this is something that very few people are putting under consideration, and maybe the Polanco deal has something to do with. Everybody I know in the game, and I have friends in like five major league front offices, and I have loads of, I do a little scouting. I have every single scout I come into contact with believes that we're going to have a lockout or a strike or whatever you want to call it for 2027. And so signing 2-year deals right now is a great way to go. Why is it a great way to go? Well, look at the Polanco thing. I said, wow, he's getting $40 million for 2 years. But there's an excellent chance he's not going to get anything close to $20 million in the second year of that deal. So I think Stearns is going to play that as far as he's got to feel the same way. And I know even managers and others in the game feel there's going to be a lockout. So we have to say 2-year contracts are right on. Is somebody like Bellinger going to be in play? Well, he's in play, but I don't really know if they're going to go there because I think he's going to have to get something like 6 years, 165.
Yep, you're right in where I've heard. I've heard he wants probably 165 to 180. I think the total dollars is something that he's looking at. How that
And
comes out, you know.
that develops off of what Pete got and off of what
Sure.
Schwarber got, and you know that's how this stuff. And they're all represented by Boris, who, by the
He knows how
way,
to play the chessboard. That's for sure.
Boris and his guys passed me a few times, and when they pass, there's a whole procession of these reporters like trying to chase them down and follow them, and it's just bizarre. But I think you have to also start with the fact that Stearns wants a defensive unit to help the pitching. Okay. So he's actually got that, in my opinion, because if you look, he's got three catchers. And the funny thing is, Alvarez defensively is the worst of the three. And I'm not saying he's bad, he's a good catcher. Torrens is even better. And even better than that, is their third string catcher who's going to spend most of his time in Senger, who's going to spend most of his time at Syracuse. But he's there to step up, immediately. So you start there. You look at Lindor at short, you look at Semien at second base, and then I think that Stearns actually likes Tyrone Taylor, which I do. The guy's an awesome defender. If he played every day, I think he'd be the Gold Glove center fielder in the National League. So you have a terrific keystone catcher center fielder. Now, what do you do otherwise? Well, I think first base has to be a position. That's why I don't believe Polanco is going to play there. First base is a position you have to have somebody who could whose glove is good. And I think that they have an in-house guy who would be Mauricio. And I know a lot of people go, "What, Mauricio?" Well, the guy's 6 foot. If you've ever been next to him, he's a massive person in great shape. He's got speed as a hitter, speed. He's a switch hitter, much better hitter from the left side. You could potentially platoon him with a Vientos if you want to, but and then put him in for defense late in the game. But he's an option. Bellinger is certainly an option if you got Bellinger to play a year or two at first base. He's a terrific first baseman and he's a terrific corner outfielder. I think center field, he's competent.
He's not as good as range as he is in the corners. I
No, and
think you lose a lot with him at first versus the corners. I think his value is in the corners because of his arm at that point.
yes, and I think that you're only looking at now with Polanco as the designated hitter, you're looking for a left fielder and a first baseman. So let's start with the left field situation. I know you wanted to go to first base, but I want to start with left field for good reasons. You have an option where you have a pair of players that I think would be a good platoon in Mike Tautman and Hayes. excellent against, Tauchman is excellent against righties. Hayes is terrific against lefties. They both more than competent. They're good outfielders with decent arms, and they're grizzled veterans, as I said in the piece I wrote. They know how to play the game. Of course, Tauchman's another Yankee that would be ending
It
up
would
with
drive the name, some of the
the.
names in your piece. And if you guys haven't subscribed yet, go to talkingmetspodcast.com. Subscribe. Dave is a great contributor. He gives great insights, different perspective from me. But you mentioned a couple ex-Yankees. That's going to drive them bananas at this point. And more will come up on this segment, especially when we get to the bullpen, but and the rotation. But listen, you're trying to look at it realistically within the scope of now and in the future.
You could get those two guys for less than $6 million for a year, but I'm talking about together, a combined $5 to $6
Right.
million, and it's a year, and then you have the lockout potential or what have you. And now there's two other guys in trade that I think would be one, and Joe Adell is with the Angels. He's not much of a fielder, but if you have Tyrone Taylor in center field, I don't think it matters as much. But you want to replace Pete's power? Adell had 37 home runs and 98 RBIs on a very bad team, so 98 RBIs would probably translate to another 25 on the Mets,
Right.
with some of the better setup players they have.
Not a defensive player that
Not at
Stearns would
all.
probably, yeah.
The guy who I like is a former Boston College standout, Sal Frelick, on the on and then there's been talk about making a deal with the Brewers. I mean, nobody's talked about Frelick. He might not be available, but it's worth. I trade some of the prospect capital, and the Brewers love good prospect capital. But here's a
Would
guy.
they trade? Would the owner allow them to trade with the Mets? That's the thing.
Well, I mean, they've already done some dealing, but I mean, and they picked up players, but who
That's
knows?
true.
But Frelick gives you the great defense. He was a Gold Glover. He gives you a great arm. He's got decent speed. He actually stole, I think, 20 bases, and he's a terrific hitter. I mean, this guy is the package, a much better player than Brandon Nimmo. So I think that's a potential. And of course, as we said, Bellinger. If the Mets wanted to go deep with a contract, but Frelick has another, I think, 3 4 years to go before free agency.
It'll be expensive.
Adell has 3 years to go before free agency. Tauchman and Hayes are free agents, and they're 1 year players. So I mean, he's got options there, and every one of those, I can make a good argument that would help the Mets enormously. Then you look at first base, and first base is. Again, Bellinger is a perfect fit, but and Mauricio is the inside fit. Other guys, Ryan Mountcastle, he's out of a job. So you want a guy for 1 year? Mountcastle is a guy. He's a free agent. They don't have to give, and all of these guys who are free agents are unrestricted. So the Mets aren't giving up anything. They're not losing a draft choice, what have you. But that's what, and if you're creative in the trade market, well, there's all kinds of possibilities because you want to mix and match and maybe put some pitching with some of these. If you're going Joe Adell, if you want to get him from the Angels, maybe you can get Jose Soriano. Here's a guy who pitches 170 innings, goes reasonably deep in games, hasn't ha been bothered by injury, is a bit of a gamer. Maybe he's the Griffin Canning type. Who they can do even more with. He actually had better numbers than Griffin Canning when the Mets got him. I think if you're going with the with somebody like looking for Frelick, well, maybe you can get your Trevor Megill in that deal. Maybe there's an even bigger deal that you can put together for another starting pitcher like everybody wants Freddy Peralta. But they'd have to give up some serious prospect capital. I mean, the best prospects are going to go in that deal. I'd like to make sure McClain's out of the question. And you, as you know,
McClain, from what I understand, is untouchable. And this ties in more when we get to the pitching side. From what I understand, and again, I don't get real good firsthand info, but there's enough smoke there. They're looking more on the bullpen slash starter side with San Diego. Maybe a Laureano, who would be a nice corner fit, hits lefty, seems to be evolving. Mets fans may remember he dropped that fly ball a couple of years ago to help Mets win a game at Citi Field with Jeff McNeil game walk off. So not a bad outfielder, not great, and
Getting
you know,
older, though.
getting older. The
Yeah.
one name you didn't mention, and he's also lefty. So if you brought in Bellinger, again, you're going back to being more lefty, although Polanco being a switch hitter mitigates some of that, is Ryan O'Hearn. I mean, good defensively, underrated, hit lefties last year. Might not need a righty complement, but you could probably, depending on Vientos's here, mitigate that. Polanco obviously might be, if they think he could play first base, maybe he could be a guy that spells him on days where there's a tough lefty and what have you. I kind of like O'Hearn as, and I keep reminding everybody, I'm not trying to advocate where you'd have the because right now you're going to be doing a lot of derivatives to make up for Nimmo and Pete's offense. I think Polanco, more than at least the next 2 years, will make up for what Nimmo does, the version of Nimmo that we see now. Making up for what Pete does, where it's 40 home runs nearly, 125 RBIs, embraces the big spot in a way that not many people do in New York. That doesn't happen overnight. It's not like what the Mets tried to do was sell everybody 20 years ago when they had Shane Spencer and Kareem Garcia and didn't get in on Vlad Guerrero. It's not what I'm trying to say. But Ryan O'Hearn is not sexy, but he's productive. And I think that that's where the team is looking on offense. They'll spend for big bats that are generational or two-way, but then they'll derivative the rest of it throughout the lineup. And I think that's what's making the fans uncomfortable because it can go bad. Look, it can go bad. You're not always right. You could have the Frankie Montas of batters. But Ryan O'Hearn is good defensively, good bat, can also play the corner outfield. So there's a little bit of versatility there. I wouldn't be opposed to it. My biggest concern right now, I think the righty side is tricky. They're very left-handed.
Yes.
Polanco helps that. I don't think Tyrone Taylor is a good enough hitter. Clearly, you have Alvarez, but he's not going to play every day. So where that righty bat comes from, Polanco's a start. That's why there's no buzz around Alex Bregman. And all I was told was the Mets are interested. Stearns likes him. Now, what that means for his market, I know he had a lot of success in Boston. I'm surprised the Red Sox haven't been more aggressive with him. They were flirting with Pete and some others. I think they flirted with Schwarber too. How does he feel about that? He opted out. What's out there? Bregman, now that puts Beatty in a spot where, what are you going to do with him?
Well, he has to go to
Bregman
first base, I
or
find out.
be part, maybe Beatty is a centerpiece of a trade for a pitcher.
Yes.
I mean, that's part of it. So there is so many balls in the air, and I think the part of where we don't know how they could go is the right-handed component of this, I think, is a big piece that you and I are not privy to. Now, there's Vientos here too, which is, again, with Polanco, he's more of a DH. So I'm thinking Polanco, if he is the DH, is spelling the end of Vientos and Vientos being part of a deal at some point because he doesn't fit what Stearns wants. And I believe long term he's a seventh hitter. I think he's going to hit bad pitching. I think he's going to be streaky. I think he's better at the bottom of the lineup. He is not a poor man's Pete Alonso, not at all. I don't even think he's Ryan O'Hearn, to be quite honest. And I know Mets fans don't like that because of what they saw in 2024, but that's just, I don't think he can hit good pitching. I don't feel confident when Vientos is up there in the seventh inning against a really good reliever with good stuff that could work the count. I don't think he could work that and come through in that situation. But I could be wrong.
I think one of the things that throws fans off is I'm not sure why David Stearns did this, but he talked about Benj making the team. I don't think there's a chance in hell that
And
Benj,
he's lefty too.
I don't think he can make the opening day lineup, and I don't think he should. I think, and remember what they did with Michael Conforto? He came up too soon, other players were fabulous. I think he needs to play at least a half a season at AAA and do well. Same thing for Williams. I mean, he's. Jett Williams is, he needs triple A seasoning. He's hardly had any. That's why I think you look at the Tauchman and Hayeses because they're 1 year guys and they could even be less than 1 year. If Benj was doing great and came up and you could release Tauchman in August or September or whatever. I think that These have all these rookies, all these prospects have to be considered in terms of now and in the future, and how do you fill in? And that's what they're up against for first base. That's what they're up against for left field. How do you use these guys, these veterans, as pieces to be replaced by these farm pieces? But on the other hand, if the Mets are going to make a big deal with the Angels or with the Brewers or anybody else, I guarantee you Benj has to be in that deal. I would love to protect Tong because I'm going to do a prospect study in January. But McClain just, I had Tong at the top of my list for a long, long time. And I still think highly of him. I still think he's worth protecting. But Sproat, I would trade because I don't think he has as much of an upside as Tong and certainly
And
McClain.
here's the other part that we're not talking about, and we don't know because it's a very quiet market. You have Murakami, the big lefty Babe Ruth DH from Asia,
Too
from
many
Japan.
strikeouts.
Too many. I don't really like him. Don't like. I had Jim Allen on. I'm
Bad
not a
D.
big bad D. That's a DH. Okamoto, who might be a better, more underrated
I
fit
like
over
him.
there,
Yep.
and then Imai, the pitcher that is being thrown into the same pantheon as Yamamoto, and he's talking a lot. He's got some moxie.
Yes.
That's funny. Those Japanese markets, unlike the Yamamoto market, which was very bombastic and leaked to the media, there's nothing. I mean, and Murakami has to sign before Christmas. So we're coming up on that. I think the Christmas week, which tends to be dead, and then the week after New Year's, which people start to like wake up from the holiday slumber with the baseball front office, I think it's going to get fascinating because those are the deadlines. I think the part that I can't figure out, because when the offseason was built around Pete and Diaz, it was so much easier to piece what the Mets were going to do on the offensive side. There's the right-handed bat, which out there you have basically Bregman out there as your big right-handed bat, and there's not much. And I'm looking at it right here. There's not much else. I mean, he's not going to come here, and it'd be so controversial. One of the better right-handed bats is Ozuna. He's not going anywhere. There's also Eugenio Suarez. Don't know how he would fit, and I'm not sure I would give him a, even if it was an opportunistic deal of a couple of years. Maybe does he fit as a DH? Can he? I mean, Beatty is a better third baseman. It would be interesting after talking about run prevention how that plays. But let's be fair, Dave. You're a baseball guy.
37.
But here's a baseball guy. Run prevention at short, second, behind the plate, center is far more important than the corners and left and right. Now, you don't want Dick Stewart at first or Glenn Allen Hill in the outfield. And fans get on my case all the time. I use these dated terms. That's who I remember. Glenn Allen Hill flopping around in the outfield and Dick Stewart as a stone hand, great hitter, by the way, first baseman in the 60s. You don't want that. That's the extreme. But you could live with. Now, Vientos, to me, you can't necessarily live with, even though they did for a year. I don't know if Suarez is Vientos, let's be fair. I think he's better than that.
I don't think that, yes, I think Suarez is better than Vientos, but he's too old, in my opinion. So
34, yeah.
let me get into something that I think is important. I would love the Mets to bring in another Japanese player, and I think you and I have discussed this. One of the
Yep.
things, you've
Good
been very,
segue into the pitching. Yep, good
yes, you've
segue.
been very tough
Very
on
hard on Senga.
Senga.
Yep. Very hard.
And
Yep.
you know that as soon as you did that, I privately sent you
Yep.
and said, I think you're being too. So let me just say this, and I did discuss this with some of the Mets beat reporters. I think that he needs another Japanese player on the team. One of the problems that he's having is he's incredibly honest. So when he's asked a question, he's trying to give a complete answer, and it's in a totally different language. It's not like the Spanish-speaking players have—they have a better understanding of English. Most of them speak some English. They just don't want to necessarily do the interviews in English. Now, a lot of people don't know Ohtani speaks fluent English but doesn't do the interviews in English.
I don't blame him. I don't blame
I'm not exactly sure why, because according to people who work with him, his English is excellent. But anyway, that's not the case for Senga. And I think what's happening when he gives an answer, trying to be honest, his interpreter, I'm not saying his interpreter is doing a bad job, but he's interpreting it too literally. He needs to be able to kind of tone down and just massage what Senga is saying so that it doesn't come out sounding so cold and like, well, it sounds like he's complaining about his physical, and I don't think he is. He's trying to explain it. And it's hard to do in a language that an Asian language, which, is so different. So having another Japanese player, there's got to be a lot of loneliness for somebody like him. He's
Sure.
got to feel left out at
Think
times.
about how you and I would be as Americans, and I don't speak a lick of Japanese, different culture, different food. I completely understand that. I think you're onto something there. I have to
And
agree
I
with
think
that.
let's, before we get rid of him, let's bring in another Japanese player, give him some more comfort, and then see where it goes. Because I got to tell you, man, his devastating goes for it is one of the best single
Yep.
pitches in the game. And now they have Williams with his incredible changeup. What do they call it? The airborne
The air bender or whatever we're called.
airbender, the
Yeah.
airbender. I mean,
Yeah.
if you get a few pitchers who have some of the best pitches in the game, your pitching staff's going to be pretty good. Now, add great defense, especially up the middle and at first base, because I do believe you could have corner outfielders who aren't great defenders with a great center fielder. And I think that's why it's really funny, because to me, Tyrone Taylor becomes an incredibly important piece of this team just on his defense alone. He's also a good base runner. He could steal base. He got speed.
Right.
He's got a great arm. I mean, all of that stuff is important. So having, so you want to get into the pitching a bit now.
Well, yeah, but that's a good segue. And let me start. It would be unfair to get into the pitching without your take on Justin Willard, because they brought in this young pitching coach, well respected from the Red Sox organization. They let a pitching coach, which who I thought has been one of the best pitching coaches they've had, maybe since Rick Peterson. And Dave Wallace, I thought highly of back in the day. I was not a Dan Worthen fan. I thought Dave Island, probably wrong place, wrong time. And Phil Regan was a placeholder. God rest his soul. I think he's passed on.
I
I
don't think
thought
so.
Jeremy Hefter did wonderful job. But let's face it, Mets in the bullpen in 24 almost led the whole league in walks, and I screamed about that. The starting rotation walked a ton of players. There was certainly gaps in the pitching, and maybe that was just injuries and circumstance. But now you have Justin Willard, who I listen to on Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. Young guy, analytically driven, seems like a good personality. Don't know much about him. Hard to find a lot about him. Do you have any thoughts on him?
Yeah, and I mean, I hung around with a lot of Red Sox guys the other day, in fact, at the Scouts table, and the utmost respect for him. They think he checks all the boxes in terms of understanding how pitching used to be approached and how it now has to be approached, how analytics play into the scene without being, he's not a driveline guy. Not at all. He doesn't believe in that. He's got a different philosophy.
Which is interesting because Yeagers is, who's the Mets basically director of pitching for the organization.
Well, that's why it's good to have different opinions, because if they start blending, you take the best parts of both. But I think what his thing, and I know this firsthand, is about throwing strikes on the margins. And just keep throwing strikes. It's not about striking people out. It's about getting weak contact. And that to me has always been, when I've done coaching of, youth and high
Right.
school, it's all about, hey, let your defenders do the work. And I think David Stearns, on a much more elevated level, must have that same
I
philosophy.
mean, Dave, let me just read these numbers to you. Walk rate, Senga 4.4, Cannon 4.1, McGill 4.3, Holmes 3.6. It actually got better as the year goes on. Peterson 3.5, not bad, still a tick high. Diaz, he was below 3. We'll throw him in the Brazenbone 3.5, Stanek over 5. Garrett 4.2, Buto when he was here 4.2, McLean was 3. That's where you want to be, and then the one who was actually the best was McCranick. He was at 1, but his strikeout rate was low. So you go back and just do some research. Forget about going back into the 60s, 70s, and 80s, even maybe the 90s. It was okay to have a 1.8 walk rate and a 4.2 strikeout rate because you trusted your defense, and along the way, a lot of it is spin and how this has become almost like wiffle ball. If you don't do that, you don't get a job, or you're not looked at because you don't miss bats. At some point, you like you said, the walks kill. They're lucky it didn't kill him in 24 out of the bullpen. You and I know it killed him in the rotation. They would not, and that was part of why these guys didn't go long. It wasn't just ineffectiveness. They would have a good outing, but by the fifth inning, they'd be at 103 pitches with two outs because they walked four guys. And you just can't, they went to these 3-2 counts. Like, you have to be able to get some quick innings with some contact. Understanding that lineups now, everybody has power. So you can't just like say, okay, I got the 7, 8, 9 hitters up. I could play the contact more. But there has to be some kind of balance here. And I hope he is about contact because this team needs it a lot.
Well, and if we want to keep, I mean, Manaea, look at it this way. Manaea can't possibly have as bad a year as he had this past year. He's got to be better. I don't think that anybody would have any question about that. You look at Holmes, you've got to put him out there to start. He was great. I mean, when you consider what he was doing, and how many innings did he pitch? About 160 innings.
Holmes had 165 innings. So next year, he can be in that 180 range if he's effective at that
And a
point.
really great pitcher should get you about 195, in my opinion. So,
I don't know if the 295 is possible because even
seven
with
innings.
McClain, look, McClain's probably a 150 inning guy. Senga's a 150 inning guy. I don't know if Peterson's going to be here. Maybe he could give you 180 now that he's up there. Holmes could give you 180 if he's effective. Manaea probably can give you 175, 180 if he's healthy. So they have some guys. They don't have a workhorse. I think that's why they were looking at Framber Valdez, but I think his market and his years, and I'm not so sold on him as being anything much better than what they have, other than the fact that he could give them innings, which is a big deal.
It is a big deal,
It's
but
a very big deal.
I'm
Very
not a
big deal.
Framber fan, but
But
I
his
think
best pitch is the one he throws the most is the one where there's the best numbers offensively. So you're relying on contact to a level that, you need a ground ball that's catchable to be able to be a good ground ball pitcher. So.
well, I'd love for them to get him my. I like his attitude. I like his stuff. And he throws strikes. So he'd be, but for Senga's sake, it's either Amai or Okamoto. I have no interest in Murakami at all. I think he'd be a terrible choice, especially now that they got Polanco. I don't think they need him. But, I think it's more about a bullpen thing now because they're going to pick up somebody who's going to be at least an ace to start the season. But I think the bullpen, Diaz got away, and I think that was the only shocker to the Mets. To the front office and the
I
owner.
think they were a little surprised at how aggressive the Rogers market. I'm really not. I think he's
Yes.
undervalued. But I think fans aren't realizing. I think Rogers is going to close for Toronto. I think that's why they gave him the extra year because they're still hurting from what happened in the ninth inning. And
Yeah.
Hoffman now 2 years in a row, he wasn't good with the Phillies against the Mets. He wasn't good with Toronto. I think that they're starting to look and say, okay, just because you have good numbers doesn't mean you're a closer. But on the part where the ace, now all winter, everybody's talking about, oh, Scooble. I just don't think he's going to be traded.
No.
Can the Dodgers trade in the position they are in and risk losing him? Sure. The Mets cannot give up the kind of package that it'll take for Scooble for 32 starts and maybe a postseason run. They can't do it. And even if they keep McClain out of it, it's going to rip the heart out of this team. I've been saying all winter they need to target a package that's expensive, but a pitcher that's ready to break out. I brought up names like John, Sean, George Kirby, Joe Ryan, Shane Baz. But here's the name that's starting to get traction, and it goes back to your San Diego conversations. It's Nick Pivetta. Now, Nick Pivetta has been a high strikeout guy and a guy that I don't think people realize has because he struggled early on in his career with the Phillies. But last year, he finished sixth in the Cy Young, had over 5 wins above replacement in Baseball Reference WAR, 13-5, 149 ERA plus, low walk rate, 2.5 walks to 9.4 strikeouts. His numbers look very McClain-esque, which you would hope McClain would be next year. That's a guy at 32 years old, little older, but might be ready to break out, has 3 years left on the contract. He does have an opt-out. So next year you'd be paying him for $19 million, and he probably would opt out potentially if you traded for him. And then the names that you're looking at with the Padres, and I'll just bring up the kind of names. Everyone's talking Mason Miller. Preller gave up a top five price prospect for Mason Miller. I think the name that more is out there, and he's good against lefties and righties, but he's lefties, is Adrian Morejon is out there. And there was another name, David Morgan, 25-year-old, had a good season, couple of bullpen arms. Now, you could get a couple of those guys and Pivetta. You solve a lot of issues in a bullpen, and maybe you trade from your prospect depth. But even Pivetta with the opt-out is probably going to cost you a Sproat. I mean, Preller is a guy that has given up a lot of prospect capital to basically play for an extra week of baseball. He's got to replenish that system. His strategy, a lot of times, I think, is what Mets fans want. But that strategy, eventually, the bill comes due, and it's ugly when it's due. Now, he's not ugly yet, but with the ownership situation and the financials, it could be. So he's going to want the Mets to replenish what he lost almost on the flip side. So it'd be interesting if they could even get a deal done. Everyone's talking Mason Miller. I just don't see that as being a deal that you can make. He just would cost so much. And he's still very reasonably priced, where I don't think Preller would bite. So that's how I feel they can go on the pitching side, more so than signing Valdez. It'd be more about getting
Right.
that. Who's the next guy that could be an ace? Kirby, Pivetta, Joe Ryan. It's still expensive, but I think not to the Scooble level. That's where I think they're going to go.
If the Mariners are going to trade a pitcher, I think more likely it would be Castillo and not
And
Kirby.
I'm not as interested in him, to be frank. Unless it's a salary dump, then maybe. I think he's going to be on the flip side of his effectiveness. But I mean, it could be better than what they have.
The other thing about somebody like Scooble, I mean, if the Tigers are in it, they're going to want to keep. But if they're out of it in July, then they could get probably a lot for Scooble, which just as a rental, as a 2 month rental,
Sure.
because they could still go out and try to sign him, 2, 3 months later. But I think that, and that, by the way, a lot of Mets fans are calling for. I can't believe McNeil is still with the Mets. Everybody else, well, McNeil has probably a lot more value in July than he does right now. So if he's playing like three or four positions for the Mets, he's doing a little DHing. He's doing some things that are a plus. They're going to get a lot more for him at that point in time, and that's understandable. And because somebody's only going to have to have his contract for, and his contract is not onerous. But I think that's what we're going to see. I think McNeil is going to be a piece of this team, but if he's traded, I wouldn't be that
I
surprised.
think it's critically important for this organization, and whether it's Ryan Lambert or Dylan Ross, they have to start developing bullpen arms. I'm looking at the top bullpen arms according to Fangraphs from last year. Now, look, you have the Aroldis Chapmans and the Duran and Bednar and Miller and Diaz and Suarez, but there's a lot of names in here like Brian Abreu, Gabe Spire, Griffin Jacks, Justin Robleski of the Dodgers, Matt Strom, Phil Maton, Mets fans know him, Jack Dreyer out in LA. Names that nobody's talking about. Ronnie Henriquez in Miami, Ben Kasparis with the Dodgers. These are names that nobody knows about. And I'm just basing it on wins above replacement. So I'm just throwing some, random sorting going. Mets need to make a Dylan Rossby in there and a Ryan Lambert. Now, I wanted two closers, and I thought the Devin Williams Diaz would take so much pressure off of them on that. And that's not going to happen. I don't want them just to run out because everybody's like, well, they got to sign Fairbanks. I don't think this, and it's starting to be talked about publicly more, this whole blood vessel thing in the cold, Raynaud's disease. It's a big deal. He's going to be in the cold here. Now,
It
I
is
know
a big
there's
deal.
ways of mitigating it. I know that in Tampa, he played in cold environments. But he played majority of his time at home in a dome. And also outside of New York and Baltimore and places like that, which obviously gets cold, he could probably be mitigated. If you're playing half of your games in New York, April is going to be a you know what, even May, and then September, you don't know. Then you want him in October. October is going to be cold. So I just don't know if that's unless they could figure out a way to mitigate that, if that's an option. I
Hey,
don't
they
see
play a
them
week of
signing.
games. They play a week of games now in March, which we never saw
Yeah, and
when we
it's
were young,
cold. It's cold. I mean, I
right?
know the
Yeah.
weather is warmer more later in the year. It's colder earlier in the year. I know that things have changed a little bit with our weather patterns, but I don't think they're going to sign. I think Rodgers was their shot at a big money free agent. I don't think they're going to sign another big money bullpen free agent. I think they're going to be opportunistic, and I think that part of this San Diego conversation, if it ever comes to fruition, will include. They may actually, Dave, tell me if you agree with this, and then I'd like to hear what your bullpen thought would be like you gave the offensive thought. I think they're going to look at the bullpen like I wanted them to look at the rotation. Rotation, who's the next guy to break out? Can I get him at a reasonable price? Bullpen, who are a couple of names that maybe it's Swanson in St. Louis with that? Who are names that are going to break out that someone has in their bullpen that they're willing to trade as part of a bigger package if the prospect capital is right going back or they're taking money back? I think they're going to try to look at the next breakout relievers rather than the established ones that are out there.
Yeah, I think that the three M's, in my opinion, Morahone, Miller, and McGill, getting one of those guys in a deal, and that's going to have to be a trade, is paramount. Somebody's got to go and get one of these guys. And I think the Mets have the prospect capital to get them. I think the other thing is Preller has to make deals. Preller has to lower his budgets.
I don't think he's going to be easy to deal with. I think everyone's focused on Mason Miller. I was told last night Miller is gonna. They want McClain. That's what I was told. Pretty good difference. They want McClain. A lot.
Or
Well, everybody
Stone.
wants McClain. McClain is as close to untouchable as there is. Benj is there too. Now the rest, that's more conversational. But do you want to just give away Tong and Sproat in a deal for a Pivetta and bullpen arms? I don't know if that's smart either.
I would give away Sproat and maybe some of the other young, Weniger. But remember, if some of these guys are going to be Rule Five, this might be a good time to move them. And they have plenty of pitching depth in the minor leagues. By the way, the Mets in the minor league portion of the Rule Five draft picked up three left-handed pitchers, which I just love because I always believe you get as many
I'm
left-handers in
afraid to do a trash or treasure on the site because I'm going to get beat up because nobody wants to hear about it. Because look at Robert Stock was reacquired, and I've seen Robert
Yeah.
Stock is one of those guys that seems to have tried to figure his stuff out. And there's some thought that he might be an undervalued asset. He Red Sox organization, Mets had him many years ago. There might be, you never know what the Mets could pick up on the margins, but I know fans don't want to hear that right now.
By the way, you mentioned the Red Sox, and they got two outfielders that could potentially move to the Mets. The problem with the Red Sox and the Mets, they don't match up for a trade. The Mets don't have anything that the Red Sox really need. The Red Sox are very deep in starting pitching. They're basically looking for, they have to sign Bregman. Or they have to get either a first baseman or a third baseman. They have plenty of infielders too. They're loaded.
Would the Mets sign Bregman and then trade Beatty to the Red Sox?
I don't think that's what the Red Sox are looking for. They need more of an impact player if they're going to lose Bregman. They need somebody to come in there and be, that
Oh,
kind of
maybe they
star.
sign Suarez, because I'm surprised that Bregman and the Red Sox haven't come to some kind of accord,
Yeah,
you
he was
know?
getting $40 million, and this year he was for 26. I think it was 32 or 33. So it wasn't like they were giving sad wages.
Right.
I think the Mets also, if they could sign one, if they could get one of those three M's, then they got to look at their farm system. Dylan Ross, I think, is ready to play, and I think he's potentially a closer. Ryan Lambert, another one. And they have all, Albert Alzolay. They have other guys who I think they just need one guy to be a co-closer type. And Morahone is more of a setup guy who's really, an eighth inning, really good guy. I like him a lot, liked him for years. I don't think there's not a lot of work to do. I think they need one starter and one co-closer. And that's the gist of it. I mean, there's nothing more to say, basically.
Here's another name that's actually doing well in winter ball a little bit, and his walk rate is really down, is Saul Garcia. He was in Brooklyn last year.
Yeah.
So they got, the thing is, it's gonna, It's going to drive everybody nuts, and it drives me nuts. Stearns says bullpen, I'll play chemistry experiment. And I said, well, if you have Diaz and Devin Williams, you could play chemistry with the rest. My problem is when you play chemistry with key high leverage setup situations, you get what you get and you blow a bunch of games. And then here in July, you're picking up Maton, you're picking up Stanek, you're at the deadline, you're giving up capital for Helsley and Rogers and things. But I still think they're going to get an arm. I just think it's going to be one that we're not talking about. I wasn't upset about Suarez going to Atlanta. I didn't like his underlying metrics. I think Suarez is a guy, not just because of age, I just think he's hittable. His numbers in Petco were way better than on the road. And I know it's like, hey, trust Stearns. Why should I trust Stearns after last year? You really don't have a choice. You have to trust that this front office, and you have to also be comfortable. And Mets fans are not comfortable. It goes back to our original conversation, because there's been so much failures of development in giving arms a try. The Dodgers do it all the time, Dave. Look at all the top closers outside of the big names I mentioned, even a Suarez and a Fairbanks. Fairbanks was a nobody. All of a sudden, he became. Look at what the Rays do all the time. How many nobodies have they taken that now? Jason Adams, he was a nobody. These were nobodies. Where are the Mets? Mets have to have nobodies that could be in the top 20 in bullpen war, like the Dodgers. Who is Kasparis? Who are these guys? Like, they're nobodies. Nobody's talking about them. You got to be comfortable at that point. And I don't think. And then here's, I'll throw this out there. It goes back. I don't think they're going to throw Holmes back in the pen unless he really can't go length. After they put so much time in his development, nor do I think he, who has an opt out, because financially it'd be such a big hit, would want to jeopardize some earnings as a starter to just help the Mets in a bullpen in 2026.
I think one of the things that you have to remember, let's say the Mets sign an MI or, another like quality starting pitcher, an ace
Right.
potential, or even a Pivetta. So you might have to take one of your starting pitchers and put them in the bullpen
All
because
right.
they'll have too many. So
Right.
who could that be? Maybe Manaea. I mean, he's a
Right.
little highly paid to be a bullpen piece, but he does have that, kind of slight drop down. He's a low three quarters guy, or high summer, a high sidearmer. So maybe that's the guy you put there for that look. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying it's a possibility. I would do
Right.
that over having Holmes because Holmes proved he can make this transition. I want to give him another chance and see if he can add some innings. And you know what? He finished off the season with a couple of great starts. I mean,
Yep, very impressive
one.
that last start on a Saturday afternoon in Miami.
Yeah.
Hey, so a couple of things before we wrap up this piece. One, give me your pitching predictions. Two, want to do a little mailbag because the fans threw some mailbags in here, and I want to throw some things, and I'd rather them hear a little bit of what your thoughts are than always hearing about me. So first, what are your pitching predictions? You gave some names on the offensive side. What do you know? I know that we have a piece coming out this week, which you'll dive a little bit more into it, but let's give a teaser to that here on this segment.
It's hard to predict. I do think they're going to go after one of those three M's. I don't know if they're going to get them. I think they have. I think Amaya has got to be on their radar, and we will know about that sooner than later. I like Pivetta. He's got really interesting stuff. I don't really have anybody else that I think is just jumping out at me as available and ready. But I told you I like Soriano from. Over and Peralta. So if the Mets could work out a trade with AJ Preller, if they could work out a trade with Matt Arnold, I think that they have the opportunity to get some really interesting packages, but they're gonna have to give up a lot. And there's no doubt about it. But they're not gonna give up McClain. I hope they don't give up Tong. And but I am willing to give up Benj because I think there's always outfielders out there. And
Everybody says he's special, though. Always.
But he's not a
Or
center fielder.
is he
That's
not?
the
Well, he's a corner, but if you're giving up Nick Markakis, that's the kind of comp I've seen, just going around a little bit. That's not a bad, that's a good all-star level player you could have control for 6 years.
Jett Williams is also a fascination to a lot of teams, and
Right.
I would be, and where he's going to be
And
most effective.
AJ Ewing, I heard Preller really likes AJ Ewing from what I understand.
And by the way, I really hope they don't trade Mauricio because I think look, he the guy's got sensational power and he's got all the defensive tools and he's got the arm. I mean,
He
it's
can
really.
be Alfonso Soriano in a lot of ways. That's the other comp people have. Like a guy
Yeah.
who maybe doesn't walk a lot, hits home runs. You got to give, like, fans sometimes like comps too much, myself included, but it gives you an idea of what maybe you have, on the whole thing. So I thought of this. There's a couple of mailbags every week. The guys like it now that I take some, whether it be on Twitter or in the chat room. They take some of the, I try to get everybody, but not everybody I could get to. Jason wanted me to re engage on an email he sent from a couple of weeks ago, which has twofold to it. And I think the first comment is something that you could appreciate, having really exposed yourself through your training and through your time at the winter meetings and really interacting with front offices and scouts and so on. So he goes, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about the modernization of coaching. The Nationals hired someone from the Mets, Desmond McGowan, to oversee their MLB draft, essentially the same role as Chris Gross for the Mets. Check Desmond's background on LinkedIn. Just 7 to 8 years ago, he was involved with an analysis business and a banking firm. He entered baseball only 4 years ago, and now he's the head of the Nats player drafting. 12 to 15 years ago, the old school scouts would laugh at this and him, but it's a reality now. Nationals also took Grayson Crawford from the Mets. I hate to be brain drained by a division rival. So, thoughts, Dave? Because that is, I mean, with the Chavez's getting kicked out, and some of the old school coaches, the guys that played in the 90s and 80s, becoming dinosaurs. Any thoughts on that?
I think there's a. It's funny being at the Scouts dinner the other night. It's getting to the point where scouts, I think, are definitely needed to peruse the amateur, the whole amateur industry. So, high school players, college players, but college players are now they're televised, although not D2s, but the D1s are televised. So there's plenty out there for front offices to look at people right in the office. I think that scouts are changing as well because there's far less scouts now. The old time scout, like you would see in the what was the movie? Trouble with the Curve, right?
Moneyball, Trouble with the Curve. Well, yeah.
Trouble with the Curve or Moneyball, what have you. But I don't think they understand now that there's a place for analytics. So somebody like McGowan, who came out of, I guess, the banking sector, they have some skills to analyze things in a different way. They analyze numbers. But there's a place for both. Do I think that scouts will ever be total dinosaurs and out of the game? No, because as I said, who's going to look at high school players and who's going to look at those international players, especially look at all the players that teams get out of Venezuela and Dominican and Puerto Rico and places. And now you're seeing players from Panama and Colombia and what have you. So, but I think there's always going to be room. That's why Evan Drellick's book, it was Jason, is something to read because you'll see how some of this stuff filtered into the game and filtered out of the game in terms of the front offices. So pick up the book and read it. Again, that's the Astro, and I'm so sorry I can't remember the title of
I'll get it before we're left,
the.
So, hey, by the way, Dan Barry wanted me to tell you, Dave, that your rationality on your post-polar bear world shortstops was refreshing. So, in a week of brain dead radio, which was other Jason's other point that he's really tired of brain dead radio, which I keep telling people, it's a business that's gone awry. Don't listen. Dan Barry said, hey, really, they'd like, and that's with all these like Miguel Andujar and Talkman names that will drive Mets fans nuts. So there's your compliment. You got one of those over there at that point.
Thank you.
Jack wanted us to know most first basemen can pick scoops. Pete isn't as special as everybody makes them out to be. Negative 38 outs above average in his career defensively. Mets will miss his bat, but not his glove. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't look. Pete Alonso's defense wasn't the reason the Mets didn't get to the didn't get to the postseason. Don't even think that for a second. His bat and his I mean he was a competent first baseman. He wasn't special, but he's sure a lot better. See, I go back even further than you to Marv Thornberry. Guy couldn't catch a thing. It was unbelievable.
They're gonna get. I bring up Dick Stewart and Glenn Allen Hill. You bring up Marv Thornberry. You don't
Yeah.
know what they're gonna kill me. I will find guys, those who are contemporary. I promise you, I'll find somebody that are those equivalents, from the last 15 years. I will, I promise. Although the way the game has evolved, they don't really put guys you can't play it a lick at
But
first.
one of the
Mike
reasons that
Piazza and Mike, God, if Mike is listening, because I talk to Mike sometimes, he listens to the show, I know. I'll li put that out there. I'm not saying you are a terrible first baseman. It was just, you're not Dick Stewart at that point, so.
By the way, Evan Drellin's book is Winning Fixes Everything. But Pete, what happened? Lindor has perfected the one-hop throw to first base. So Pete
Yes.
got a lot more chances to scoop and pick at first base than most first basemen would get. Lindor does not have a great arm, but he's pretty accurate, and he's really honed in on how to make that one-hop throw to first. So, and I think other guys were picking that up too. Although the third baseman option that the Mets have, and Vientos and Beatty, very strong arms. But again, a very strong arm that throws a ball in the dirt is even harder to catch. I give Pete some credit for being a good picker, and I will tell you that scouts who I know who scouted him in high school and college, he was a catcher, and he was a horrendous catcher. And then they moved him to first base when he was a Florida Gator, and he was pretty horrendous at first base. So a lot of them were surprised he became even a marginally competent first baseman in Major League Baseball.
Here's from Sam, thinks that Stearns is misreading the market. This fan base relationship with Stearns is in a bad, unhealthy place right now. It's toxic. When, Pete leaves, it's getting worse. He feels he shouldn't have been caught off guard on the Diaz situation. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yes. So I think that, there was something I saw years ago, and I adapted it and changed a little because there was no attribution on who wrote it, but it was a piece called Risk Taking is Free. And that's what I tried to impress on my son and other young people. It's worth taking a risk. And if you don't take risk, I don't know what kind of a human being you are, because you're going to be just a guy who, does something for 40 years and retires and, never
Right.
challenges himself.
Right.
And so David Stearns is certainly going to take risk. I mean, he's being paid handsomely. If he doesn't, he's willing to take the risk. And at the end of another, what is it, 3 more years, if he hasn't produced something, he might well get canned. But you got to take the risk. And that's all there is to it. And, to do that takes a special person who has a vision and who, and again, everything I've heard from other people who have worked with him, everything I've read indicates that he's somebody who's willing to take that risk, who's smart enough to take that risk, and who can succeed with that risk. And by the way, a good part of why the Brewers have been a successful franchise from the winning perspective and getting in the postseason, it's still, that team was still built by him to some degree. I mean, Matt Arnold's obviously putting his mark on it in the last few years, but I'm not willing to say I don't know more. You and I don't know more combined, or any of these other bloviators.
Right.
But we got to give him a chance.
Thomas one two more before we wrap up. Thomas said it's overblown that Diaz was this in basically an irreplaceable pitcher. Devin, it's only 4% of the innings or so for the season. Statistically, he's likely to blow one more game than Diaz next year, all things being equal. Before that Pete home run in 2024, I would agree. He has a lot to prove. Thoughts on that?
Devin Williams is, I mean, if you look at his underlying numbers from last year, basically he had about 3 or 4 outings where he got bombed for whatever reason. And there's no closer or relief pitcher who isn't going to get bombed a few times in a season, because you're going to go out there on a couple of days where you're not well. People don't realize a baseball player, I mean, you look at the NBA and NHL. They play 81, 82 games. And, you have a lot more time to recover in between. There's very few back-to-back days where you're performing. Baseball is insane. I mean, it's totally football. You're playing maybe 18, was it 18 now, regular season games and some
Right.
preseason games. So
Right.
you're going to have days where you go out there, you just don't feel well, and or your arm's bothering you or something is not right. And so, but if you look at those underlining numbers, He had a good season. And
Right.
you have to be able to pull out those three or four things and then look at the numbers without those three or four. I mean, the guy still has that quality changeup. I have no reason to believe he can't be a closer. And I think Stearns is. But here's the thing, and I've said this to you privately. I think the future of baseball is two closers on every team because nobody's
I
getting
agree. No, it's
averaging
you
6 innings, a start.
unless you have a bully offense that could give you a cushion, and that's been one of the problems. The Mets offense, especially early last year, didn't allow the bullpen any wiggle room with some of their B and C relievers. It's a big problem. Yeah,
So you
you're
have to
right.
have two closers in the future
Yep.
now, and you
Yep.
have to have two guys, probably a righty and a lefty, who could go 2 or 3 innings. And
Yep.
that's the future of a bullpen. And by the way, when I looked it up recently, I mean, the Mets and the Orioles in 1969 only used six pitchers. One used seven. I think the Mets used six pitchers and the Orioles used seven in the whole World Series.
Yeah,
Can you
long
imagine
ways.
today? How many
Nope.
pitchers did the Dodgers use
I'm
last?
not even gonna look it up. No. Last thing. So I'll give you this goes back to where we started, the feeling of the fans. David wrote, and this you'd appreciate. This was the worst off the field. This is after Pete and Diaz were scooped up. This is the worst off the field day in franchise history. He compared it to Seaver and the Midnight Massacre. Felt that Cohen with his money is something that shouldn't make this happen. And Sal Mata said, desperate need of group therapy. And he says his Mets flag is at half mast. And they're depressed. And I don't know if anything is really going to make guys like Sal and David. Now you have a guy like Ben. Who's in the minority that's applauds Stearns, says he basically has cojones for doing this and points out some of the things that Pete's a heavy guy with no defensive versatility. Some of his numbers after April were troubling. Talked about how Mets were kind of lucky to even make the playoffs Stearns' first year. So maybe that's clouded some of the vision. But basically, when I talk about Dave, Sal, and Ben, and their different perspectives, majority of the fans feel like Sal and David. Wrapping up, what's your message to the Met fan base for the rest of the offseason? And
Well,
on that note.
I said it before. Stearns is a risk taker, and we should all be looking at it from this perspective. It can be quite exciting. Now, if the Mets get off to a decent start, and if they play well through the season, even if they don't quite make the postseason or they just squeak into the postseason, I think it's going to be a successful year. That could be quite enlightening in terms of how they handle these prospects, how they make trades. I mean, this is getting a real inside baseball for the next 6 weeks in terms of how do you build a roster that's more complete. So that's kind of a lot of fun. I think if the Mets get off to a terrible start,
Gonna be
then
rough.
Stearns
Gonna be
is going to have a
rough.
really tough time, and
And
they're
I'm
going to
worried
have a
about
tough
the
time selling
environment at
seats.
Citi Field returning to where it was that first week of 24 up until really the Dodgers series before things turned around. I worry about that. I worry about the
But
fans being impatient and really giving every out, every miscue, every bad inning, just booing and being negative. If that's what they're gonna do to go to the ballpark, then they might as well have the create that energy. They might as well have the self-fulfilling prophecy of failure, because that's what's going to happen.
and just keep in mind what I said earlier, that the CBA looming out there and the potential of not having a season or a partial season for 2027. That's in the thinking too, in terms of how a front office is going about things. And so, for people who really like to see how somebody strategizes and how things happen, this is going to be enlightening. This is going to be an eye opener for every Mets fan. And I think, you know what? It's done, man. Those players are gone. There's nothing you can do about it. You can certainly cheer them the first time they come up to the mound or come to bat, and then you can boo them. And you could have whatever fun you want to have at the ballpark. But we're going to have other players who are going to perform and probably a few who aren't going to perform. So enjoy it. This is what being a baseball fan is all about. It's not all, roses all the time.
No, I said when Cohen took over, it's not going to be a yellow brick road to a dynasty. So, Dave, you've been very generous with this roundtable on this snowy, cold, hot stove morning, appropriate backdrop for the baseball offseason. I hope that the fans feel better after our conversation. Look for Dave's part two on the pitching this week over at Beyond the Mic. Go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And Dave, we'll catch up soon, my friend.
Hey, man, have a good one.
That's David Mills helping me co-host a little bit here on part two. Hope you enjoyed this very long. I think we came out between my part one and part two, 2 hour edition of the Talking Mets podcast. We'll wrap up on that. Of course, you could check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Go to the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Check it out. Chat for free. Premium content, updates on the show, interactions with me, as you just heard. We do read them, maybe not right away, but we will get to most of your commentary. So check it out at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.